Welcome back to another episode of the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast, Churners. This is a fourth edition Shadowrun actual play GM'd by myself, Paul, and driven forward rather non-committally by Veronica, Cecile, a.k.a. College Girl, Kat as Deandra, Val as Ollie, a.k.a. Boxer, and Beth as Grace, a.k.a. Nightingale. This is episode 9 of season 2, and it takes place in possibly my favorite location and situation of I'm speaking, of course, of good old Olga's Tea Room in Tacoma and Deandra's fan club. In this episode, the team settles in at the tea room to make sense of their discoveries and plan their next moves, but are distracted by the fan club. Olga herself makes an appearance. If you want to read more about the tea room, check out the Seattle 2072 sourcebook or join us on our Discord, where I'm going to post some of the canon lore. One more thing that is happening. I'm falling in line with some of the other whiz shows out there and trying my hand at creating an intro song with AI. I've put one at the end of the show if you feel like listening to it. Let me know on our Discord if you like it, and check out some other versions there as well. Okay, chummers, here's an intro to another Nova Hot show out there for you to check out.
Are you looking for some hot runner-on-runner action? Want to hear some hot steamy runs in the shadows? Feel the heat of mojo in your hands? The sting of cold steel hitting your flesh? Well, get your ears ready and join What the Dice, releasing new episodes on all streaming platforms and YouTube on Fridays. Come over and frack around and find out. See you soon.
It's Craig.
Hey, Craig.
I hate that guy.
Well, he's here. We can't talk bad about him anymore.
Haven't you heard? AI is alive, so you gotta be nice.
Okay, Horizon. Anyway, is the recap for us, or was it for also for them in the audience?
No, it was just for us, just to make sure that we remember what was going on. You guys did a sort of a reconnaissance run on Warehouse Alliance. You were, Prokop was acting as fixer for an anonymous Mr. Johnson. And you found some interesting data in the computer system. And you also found, when you were inspecting the warehouse, Grace did some astral investigation and found some rather horrific stuff, including a container filled with live zombies, another container that seemed to contain the corpses or bits and pieces of an awakened family unit. So that was pretty bad. But in general, the run went off pretty flawlessly. And then you guys left without further incident.
We just don't have evidence.
Don't have the evidence. Well, you might have some evidence because you found, if I remember correctly, you found... So what was it that you found?
We found some sort of server or mainframe or something.
I gotta find my notes.
Mainframe, yeah. Boxer plugged into it and did some stuff.
You found the ownership document of the company, and you I think you were able to decipher that at least one of them was George Van Housen, and the other, so there was a list of names on it, right? And the names, there was a list of names. At the top of the list was Dean Petrov, Kirill Petrov. He was the only name that didn't actually have a set of initials behind it. The others all had a set of initials behind it. You were able to decipher one, Jim Ansell, who had the initials GVH behind him, and you recognize the name Jim Ansell as the knight errant captain who you killed, or who was killed by a cranial bomb. And you know that his name was George Van Housen, so the GVH aligned there. So you're thinking that the list of owners, the public list of owners, is really a number of aliases. And if you could figure out the initials behind them, you could potentially figure out who they were, which in turn would discredit Warehouse Alliance, because it's basically being run by a group of known and disgraced criminals.
I remember where we left off. I had something to do.
Yes, you were going to visit...
some clinic.
Yes, you were going to visit... My notes are terrible. Oh, well, that's interesting. I've got Warehouse Alliance as an NPC in my NPC folder. That's why I can't find them. Yes. So, what I wanted...
I spell Housen?
H-A-U-S-E-N.
So Housen. We're like
yep. N- H-O-U-S-E-N.
H-O-U?
Yep.
Oh, it was anglicized. Don't worry about
Von Housen.
It was anglicized. Don't worry about it. Silence!
Wait, I was on Reddit. Cecile copied the file to her shoe. Oh, that
and
file.
Then she promptly copied them back later.
That's right. All right. So, yeah, look at that. Liz has the complete list of names. And Cecile was on her way to visit someone by the name of Haley Lorraine, who, coincidentally, after you found her name, was you found out that she runs a street clinic in Auburn, not too far from your current location.
Haley so, Lorraine. Got it.
Where do we want to pick up? You guys have left Warehouse Alliance. Do we want to let some time go by? Or are you guys... It's basically, you had the... You went in the morning. So let's call it sometime in early afternoon is where we're at. You left. You promptly left. You got out.
We were going to... basically sit down and talk about our next moves, I think.
All right, so where are you going after you leave Warehouse Alliance?
Well, I don't think any of us have a safe house yet. So my place or Box's...
No, we do.
Oh, yeah.
Don't we? Didn't we get one, honey?
Yes.
We actually ended up... Did we?
Well, I gave...
Sure we got one.
I think I told Valerie that she could... he could regain the safe house that was lost initially, because I didn't really think it was fair to just...
Oh, you did?
Automatically rob a safe house right out of the gate.
My bad.
Okay, I'll add that one back.
In all honesty, same with Cecile's money right out of the gate. I think she should probably have that money back. Because basically, like, I stole that from you the very first session.
It's like when the tutorial...
Well,
the best
we can
item.
Say that Cecile got it as, like, maybe Procrop gave it to her. that extra money, that cash flow.
I don't think he would do that.
Well, who would give her that money?
I think she probably was smart enough not to just have it in her general public account.
What money?
Whatever money at character creation you had left over that supposedly got burned by getting burned.
I don't want to reveal too much, but I wouldn't worry too much about that amount of money.
Okay.
Cecile was poor.
Well, I recall...
No, she was a grad student.
Yes. Isn't that synonymous?
No, not quite.
I mean, you know.
Sometimes.
Majority.
Unless you're a very well-funded grad student.
And are on good terms with your parents.
And they're rich.
So, you know, like, grad students at Harvard. Good.
Yeah. I harbor the suspicion that rich people rarely become grad students. Because why?
I feel you may be right.
I do not have any evidence to contradict this claim.
In any case. You guys, I believe you left in a grid guide, Johnny Cab. And Cecile, you are headed for the clinic.
I'll let them do their talking first.
All right, so you catch the grid guide. You take the grid guide to Olga's tea room because Diandera is curious to see whether Elven Fan Club is still hanging out there.
And they are. Didn't say that. She said, why don't we go to Olga's? But yes, that is what she's curious about.
And they are there waiting for you. And they seem to have grown in number. In fact, the whole lower end of Olga's tea house is now taken up by Diandera wannabes in both dress and makeup and fake pointy ears.
I think Diandera just straight up ignores them.
Of course Diandera does.
I want to terrorize them with my talking dog bit.
As the team enters, the Olga's Tea House falls silent. If you recall, Olga's Tea House is sort of a Russian style, decorated like late Victorian era, and very plush and comfortable, and there are pastries offered and tea cakes and lots of different teas and coffees from around the world, both soy-based and real. And you also remember that there was potentially, you think that there might actually be some kind of a brothel going on upstairs because of some of the traffic, but now, today, this afternoon when you enter, there is actually a surprising number of Diandera-style clones in the establishment, and they are sitting at various tables, whispering amongst themselves, drinking their tea with their pinkies extended, and all wearing rapiers. The room falls silent as the team enters, and I think, you know, probably a good time for the audience, if we could all just one more time describe how we all looked, starting with Diandera, since you are the subject of attention here.
Did we change out of those uniforms?
Did we change out of the uniforms?
You did not.
Okay. Diandera immediately walks into the bathroom with a shoulder bag and changes.
Is she wearing her rapier at her hip?
Yes.
Okay, so you go into the bathroom and you change, and when you exit, how do you look?
Diandera is probably wearing what is like her basic outfit, which is like a trench coat almost that has the double buttons on it. She's not wearing a tie today, but usually with a collared shirt and a pair of like trousers, I guess. And her trench coat is cut kind of oddly. It has slits up the sides so she can like move around. And her belt is on top of her coat right now. Her like sword belt is.
And she's wearing her rapier.
Always. And it's lightly ornamented. It probably has at most maybe like a carved pommel. But otherwise it's just cup and Bar's rapier or whatever.
And we'll describe her physical appearance.
She is a average height elf, which means she's fairly tall compared to the humans in the area. She is green skinned with slight patterning to her skin. It looks almost like vines. and one of her ears is cut off about two-thirds of the way up. Her hair is this kind of light straw color, with her eyes being very vivid reflections of stars in a pool at night.
All right. And how about Boxer?
She's still wearing the uniform, but she rather pointedly disassembled and put away her rifle. Because, yeah, no, it'd be a bit too much attention. And
she did that while you were in the Johnny cab.
Yep. And she threw a leather jacket over the uniform. So it looks a little bit less conspicuous, but anyone paying even cursory should be able to tell, hey, they came in wearing the same thing.
Are you wearing your respirator?
Yes. Nobody can see her muzzle, but that doesn't hide the fur, the ears, the tail. She has a sandy tanned fur, and when she sees people's eyes on her, her tail goes behind her as if to hide. Hers go
flat.
She
has a cyber arm, doesn't she?
Yep, but it's not obvious.
So she looks a little bit like a annoyed cat.
Yeah, her eyes purple. They cast around at them.
Yeah, as you meet anybody's eyes, they immediately, any of the Diondir wannabes, they immediately look away down at their tea and coffee and pointedly stop looking at you.
Well, once she's satisfied with them not being overly interested, goes pet the dog beside her.
And Grace.
The dog is a German Shepherd. It is like still wearing a security harness, an unbranded one specifically, but like a blue, much like the uniforms they'd been wearing. As soon as it comes in, it like stops slightly out of the way of the doorway, and it looks around, its ears pricked on end. Nightingale is really, really worried. This does not make any sense. This seems almost like some kind of magic that is causing this. Is there?
Look, I don't know either, but she...
No. She wouldn't say that out loud, but she's thanking it. She...
You mean looking at the weird characters here?
Yeah.
Are you reacting to the weird characters? You're dual-natured. Grace is dual-natured, so she's seeing them, and she's recognizing that they are not... You recognize by their auras that they are... Their physical appearance and their aura does not necessarily match. They all appear to be humans, and they are, some of them, there's a mix of magically active and non-magically active humans here. None of them are elves, and in fact, in your astral vision, you can tell that some of the alterations and modifications that these people have made to themselves to match Diander's appearance are artificial. This is not lost on Grace.
Okay. Grace whined. Like there's an audible whine. Are there spells? Are they under the influence of spells right now? Like are there
some of them are. Some of them are. There are not illusion spells. Well, that's not true. There are some fashion spells that have been cast, which you recognize because you've seen them on Cecile. And you know, there are some of the people who are magically active here do have spells on themselves, but they seem to be voluntary subjects of those spells. And they're mostly spells that you recognize are designed to aid and benefit their imitation of Diondir.
The dog breaks away from the group at the door and like marches up. And it's very specifically a march. It's not one of those happy-go-lucky walks that dogs do. It's not even a lazy amble with its owner at its side. It's a march. She comes up to the Diondir posers, and she just, like, looks back and forth between the group of them. And she says, out loud, in plain English, still in the form of a dog, "What on earth are you people doing?"
At that point, so you've walked up to the nearest table, which is two women and two men, in their probably younger to mid-20s by your judgment. And they are all affecting the dinder look with long coats. One of the males in specific is magically active and has obviously cast a fashion spell on himself or his clothing. He's wearing a long coat too. He's a little bit more ostentatious than Deandir would ever be. It's sort of a long, velvety, blue, deep blue coat with golden buttons on the front and a very ornate rapier and dagger at his side. And when you walk up to the table, at first they sort of glance at you sort of in a smiling, friendly kind of way, as if they see a dog coming up and they're both amazed because pets in the sixth world, especially real live, you know, dogs walking around the street, is a rarity and quite expensive. So they're looking at you both in amazement and also in expectation. And then Grace speaks, and immediately the demeanor at the table changes from one of sort of a friendly, nonchalant expectations to a sort of a heightened interest and awareness and excitement. You see the excitement ripple through their auras, and they immediately start chatting amongst themselves. See, I told you, she is magic. She just pretends not to be. She's obviously a powerful mage who's just masking her aura. She obviously has a great masking spell on her. They're ignoring you further. Like they're acting like you're just like part of the
scenery
ensemble. Not the scenery so much as like you're part of Deandir's entourage and, you know, just part of her aura and mystique to them. And they're convinced now that, you know, Deandir is magical and special and that you're like her familiar or something like that.
No. I don't think you understand. This makes no sense. This makes no sense. Like, please explain to me. What are you doing? Why are you doing it?
One of the girls reaches out,
agitated at this point. She's like raising her voice.
One of the girls sort of leans over and like goes to pet your head and, nice doggy, good doggy. Shh, come on, be quiet, doggy. It's good. Everything's fine.
Whenever she touches the dog, she realizes that is no dog. Her hand, it does not meet fur and ears, but instead some kind of hardy fabric. The Nightingale's hood pulled up over her head, and whenever
she pulls her hand back down, immediately.
She can feel the hardness, the keratin of her horn, and then finally she's back.
When she touches, does she actually come in physical contact with the horn?
Yes.
Does anything happen then?
She's not actually perceiving right now, is she?
She's not magically active.
No, she wouldn't feel anything other than just the physical sensation of brushing up against something with a hard core and a soft exterior.
She pulls back. She turns to the rest of the group at the table and says, "It's an illusion." And the young man in the blue, the velvety coat, looks at you and you get the sense that he has shifted to astral perception and it's like, wow, what is that? That's not a dog.
Nightingale is getting frustrated at this point. She like retreats back to Boxer.
Boxer, have you taken a seat at this point? Or are you still standing?
No, Boxer's looking at them with the most derisive incredulity she can muster on her.
Alright, so they're ignoring you at that point. And then Deandir comes back out of the bathroom, having changed out of her blue uniform. And Deandir, you see Grace and Boxer interacting with one of the tables of your fan club.
Deandir does not give two shits. She just walks up to the counter and orders her coffee and whatever pastry she wants today.
And as you do that, one of the other tables close to you immediately clears out, and the people who are getting up from it, the young people who are getting up from it, immediately like sort of beckon you and sort of offer you their table as they go and disperse amongst the rest of the tables.
Okay, I'm going to make a composure check for Deandir, because I feel like this is one of the moments where she tried to just pretend not to notice them again. Let's see.
is that?
Wow, it's surprisingly good.
Dinder has always managed good composure roles.
She just, like, waits for her coffee and then sits down pretending not to notice.
All right, so Grace and Boxer, are you going to continue with the interaction or are you going to move to the table?
Look, Grace, whatever cult bullshit this is, you're not going to get through to them. You shouldn't even bother wasting your breath.
Just I don't get it. I don't get it.
Ask the woman herself. I'm sure she has some kind of answer for this.
Yeah, there are about almost, 20 to 25 of these people in Olga's tea room at this point.
And her little faith group here seems pretty eager to give us a seat, so might as well.
Yeah.
All right, so do you go and order some stuff for...
Yeah.
Grace,
Mark is going to get... Well, does she want to order in dog form?
Grace will forgo it. She's already got a little bit too much attention.
Boxer's gonna get a coffee and two pastries. One for the dog, one for herself.
You guys put in your order and are served by a somewhat nervous-looking young human woman behind the countertop in she's wearing a white apron and she's looking around and she's obviously a little bit nervous at this point. And as you guys are going to sit down at the table, your attention is drawn to, both by sound and visually, to the steps, the stairs coming down out of the upstairs. A massive troll woman is coming down the stairs. She's both physically imposing and imposing from her demeanor. She's obviously Eastern European in descent. And her face is just, quite aside from being, even if she was a human, she would be imposing. Her face has just got the angled planes of a hatchet, both brutal and angry. Her eyes are yellow, and her horns have been polished to a high gloss. She's wearing a deep, deep red flowing dress that does not do anything in any way, shape, or form to impart any femininity on her, and is clearly intended not to. It's more of a, probably more intended in terms of irony. As she comes down the stairs, they're creaking under her weight, and her glare is fixed on Diander. She's probably a good 2.5 meters tall. She has to duck as she comes down the stairs. And she walks up to the table. The whole room falls into a hush, where there had been sort of an excited buzz as the Diander wannabes looked around and sort of under their voices, like, exclaimed at the presence of their idol. Everything has fallen silent now. As the troll comes up to your table and plants a massive fist on it, fingers curled, knuckles down against the table, looking straight at Diander.
Boxer's hand slips beneath the table.
Demonstratively around, and she looks back at Diander and she says, "What are you the cause of this nonsense?"
Cause be a harsh word. I'm just here. And Diander uses, like, the most polite term you can for someone in Sprethiel when she's addressing Olga.
Make a perception test, please.
3.
You recognize that she recognized the word, the Sprethiel words that you used, even though she does not react to it overtly, but you can see it in her eyes. It's like,
"Well, I can't say that I'm necessarily unhappy. They're spending a lot of money in here, so you can keep coming if you want to. Just make sure it doesn't turn into anything nasty. Be bad for business, if you get my drift." And she sort of looks upstairs. She glances upstairs. Then she reaches out one of that massive hand and towards you as if to shake hands.
I think if Diander thinks that Olga wants to shake hands with her, she's going to shake hands.
Your hand is basically swallowed up by by Olga's rough, calloused hands. However, her grip is pretty gentle as she shakes your hand and says,
"Well, I can see that being pretty can be its own kind of curse. Anyways, you're welcome here anytime you want. My name's Olga, and that should tell you something. This is my tea room. If you want me to get rid of these lackeys, I'll do it, but I also appreciate their trade. She looks around and she grins. They better watch out that they don't end up trade upstairs, though.
Well, I might ask them to spread out a little bit on occasion, if they don't mind. But I do not think I have any control over them whatsoever. I thank you for your time. Your business, as always, I adore. Thank you for gracing me with your presence. That's what Diandere says in Sporethiel. It has like the understanding that like I know that I am in your power, but like if you need anything from me, let me know.
Yeah,
that's the subtext of that phrase in Sporethiel.
She gives sort of a hearty laugh that booms through the room. Probably Grace flinches a little bit at the loudness of the sound, and then she releases your hand and she bends down slightly and looks at Grace and says,
"Oh, what we got here? Is this a dog?"
Of a sort.
Grace is actually like cringing down, and this translates to the dog like scooting back awkwardly while also almost laying down, its ears pinned back.
The Olga is larger than Miss Magnum Foot. She's huge. Like there's so much red shiny fabric draped across her that you could probably, you know, outfit an entire dance troupe or something with it. You could make the curtains for the opera house out of the material on her back. She starts to reach down towards you, and then as she sees you cringing away, she straightens up and laughs, chuckles again. She looks at Boxer and Deander, and she says,
"Well, pleasure meeting you. I've been seeing you coming in here from time to time, and I sort of understand what's going on here. Any case, us metas gotta fit, stick together, don't we?"
And she nods at you, gives you sort of a half salute, and glares around the room, and you see everybody else just sort of wilt and cringe under her gaze. And then she looks over at the girl behind the counter who's sort of quaking in her boots, and she says,
"You make sure these guests of mine taken care of and treated properly, you hear?"
And the girl just sort of nods. She appears to be on the verge of tears. And then retreats back upstairs. And with that, I'll leave it up to you guys to discuss your next move.
I think we've established that no one shares a language, at least between the three of us.
That is correct, except for that when Grace casts Mind Net.
Wait, we don't share a language?
Boxer, what languages do you speak other than English?
Spanish.
Okay. Other than
I English? Speak Spanish.
Okay, well...
Spanish, Japanese... Hold on, let me take a look at it.
How the heck did Grace learn Japanese?
She picked it up from the community. Japanese, she knows a little bit of Latin. Spanish.
She picked it up.
Wait.
Like she picked up the worms in Pines.
If Grace knows Japanese, Grace can mind net to Boxer, and they can just share information, and then I can speak to Grace in Japanese, because one of Diandere's languages is Japanese.
But do you not have English?
I do, but I was considering...
Just looking for a code language that not everybody around you can understand.
Yeah.
No one speaks Sporethiel.
I have Japanese.
So make another perception test.
Me, I guess.
Yeah, Boxer, Grace.
Two.
You said make a perception test. Let me see what my perception is again. So that's six die. Oh, I haven't opened up the roll 20. Silly me. I got two hits.
All right. So all three of you recognize that while Japanese may not necessarily be everybody's native tongue in Seattle, there are quite a few people in Olga's who look like they could potentially understand Japanese. If these people are sinners and their parents or they grew up in any kind of corporate facility and went to a corporate school, chances are it was a Japanacorp, and chances are that they learned Japanese. Japanese is not going to be the most secure language that you can speak here.
It's going to be more secure than English is.
Probably.
Unless Grace has some kind of spell to immediately translate language, then we can speak in like Cantonese or something.
Both Deandir and Boxer probably also recognize that there are several small closed circuit type cameras in this space.
Can I with the perception a little? Hits.
Absolutely, go right ahead.
Why don't you just text each other?
I think probably because Deandir does not have anything but like a flip phone.
Deandir has that. I think that's a misconception. Deandir just has like basic functions on her smartphone. It's or on her like comlink. She has a comlink. It's just not. She just hasn't done anything with it.
She doesn't have any kind of earbuds or any kind of headwear that would allow her to just subtly operate it. She'd have to actually pull it out and text them. And I imagine Grace is the same way.
What was that?
You'd probably have to pull out your comlink and actually, you know, physically text it. You don't have earbuds or like you're not wearing contacts or glasses, goggles or anything like that that have any kind of VR display.
She would have to physically pull it right out. You're right.
Yeah. So it would basically be like, you know, pulling your cell phone out and all sitting around texting each other. That would
work. Which we can.
Of course it is.
I mean, we could do it. It wouldn't appear that suspicious anyway.
All right. So you're communicating. Well, let's just say you found a way to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a way to communicate.
Or we can role play the troubleshooting of how we're actually going to communicate.
We could role play that.
As much as I love role play, I feel like that's like not backtracking role play, but like something that we should have done before.
I also feel like it's kind of a dead end.
Yeah, in our like time we have had in the characters' time they've had together, they've probably figured out some.
Yeah, we can just assume it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're just playing Second Life.
Yep.
Third Life.
But yeah, since the mind net doesn't work, we have to use different options.
You guys are hanging out, eating your pastries, drinking your coffee, being stared at by weird Deandir lookalikes.
Of course. So, to business. The information that we have is currently circumstantial. We could deliver it to Mr. Johnson, but I doubt that it would be interesting enough for them to operate on.
So one other thing before we keep going, there were a couple of other things now that I'm thinking about it that you did find out. You had some shipping manifests and shipping schedules. There was at least one, there was definitely one company on those that you have a strong suspicion are a Yakuza front. And you have the, on those manifests and that schedule are the numbers of the containers that company is shipping through that Warehouse Alliance facility. And when you were in the warehouse looking at the containers, they clearly had that company's logo on it. And that company was Ogura Freight, O-G-U-R-A Freight.
So, with that freight lead, we could either go to their warehouse and attempt to find information, or we could attempt to waylay one of the crates we know something is in. And that way we could get the information that we're looking for.
Yeah, the one of the Ogura freight containers, I don't know if this was explicitly stated, but probably, I know Boxer's probably always visually recording And between the information that you get from Grace about what she saw in the container and the recordings of the interior, the knowledge of the interior facility, you can directly link one of the Ogura freight containers to the container that had the illegally, the remains of the Nagas, the Naga hides.
Did we get anything identifying on the container? Like serial numbers or whatever?
I'll just say yes.
We have all that information.
You have the manifest, so you can pretty much cross.
Right, yeah.
We know when the shipments we want to target are departing as well from the manifest, right?
Yep.
Or when they're going to leave warehouse lines.
You know when they're going to leave, you know what shipping companies are coming to pick them up. The other thing, I guess it's a little bit of metagaming, but actually, I guess I should make you guys roll. The three of you can all make a logic roll. Logic plus intuition.
Logic plus intuition. Kind of okay at those. Yep, yep. Logic plus intuition, 4.
Andrew got 4. Boxer got 2. So with 4 hits, Dander, and even with the 2 from Boxer, between the two of you, you remember, or you, obviously it wasn't that long ago, but as you're talking about it, you're pretty sure that the last guy that you talked to, the lieutenant or captain or whatever he was at Warehouse Alliance, the security guy, you're pretty sure you were made and that he just didn't, like, want to start a giant firefight in the middle of the warehouse. So if you were made, there also is a chance that if he reports that up through the chain of command that there was a breach of security, that potentially all of those illegal goods could be moving out of that warehouse in an expedited manner.
Fuck. Well, it comes down to the choice. Do we want to crash a truck or do we want to break into a warehouse?
Frankly, I'd rather crash a truck.
Well, I imagine
that's a lot more manageable.
I imagine we should pick a truck and wait for it outside of Warehouse Alliance and then tail it until we can get to a point where we can tip it over and take pictures of what's inside.
We need to make sure it's the right truck. I suppose we'll be able to see, we'll be able to know. No, we don't have that information. And we don't have Cecile, so we don't have a specialist to hack into it. Grace.
Hmm?
If I give you the identification numbers of the crate, do you think you'd be able to find it when they're beginning to load it onto the trucks?
That's a good question.
In Astral, you won't be able to see numbers.
Well, it depends upon how the numbers are on the crate. If they are, like, if there is a significant texture to them, like if they're inlaid or embossed onto the metal, I would be able to read them. But that may be something they specifically, you know, design against.
The chances are what you're really going to be, I mean, you're going to be able to identify that one crate that has the remains of that family in it.
Sniff out the aura.
That you'll be able to get. You might not like it because it's a horrifying aura of... Yeah, it's just a horrifying aura. This family was just murdered and harvested for their component parts.
So I would be able to detect the aura.
I don't think
via astrally perceiving. Depending on how close we could get, I could also use clairvoyance because we remember the colors. They were both green, right?
Yep.
And the specific people who were sending it out.
Here's the real thing, I think. They're not going to empty those, storage crates to put stuff, because they're like big shipping containers, right? In the warehouse that.
Yeah, they are big, you know, think of it as like big shipping containers that you get on, you know, big ships that.
So that they're not going to like load the shipping containers into an unmarked truck. They're just going to throw them on the back of a flatbed and strap them down, or clamp them down, I guess. They're not going to hire out unmarked vehicles. They're just going to throw them on the back of a flatbed, right?
That makes sense to me.
So we should be able to identify them from a distance, because we know what they look like on the outside.
Then we just need to actually stop the vehicle. Fortunately, I have something to the task.
That's good. I imagine we should use some kind of vehicle that has a little more stopping power than a bike, though. Or should we stick on my bike? Or should we hijack a grid guide?
Well, I'll tell you this, the three of us are not going to fit on your bike.
Sidecar, sidecar, sidecar!
What do you want me to do? Hug her tight and shoot a grenade launcher with the other hand?
No, I was kind of expecting you to get on the back of the bike and then we can put the dog in the sidecar.
Yeah. You if we could just get up to speed with the car, well, and there's a little sound of magic, though not the characteristic dancing light.
How about we make that plan B and we try to take the truck with conventional means first?
Well, I don't know what point she was trying to make, but she is right something.
No.
We don't need to stop it. We could get onto the back. We just need proof of what's in there. Recording good enough?
Recording.
We just need to know which one contains the incriminating evidence, and you need to get me in there so I can record it.
What I'm thinking is that we get someone in the cab with the driver, and we tell them to comply while they are driving and the motorcycle is keeping with them. We move you onto the back, figure out how to get you into the container.
I can breach in.
Get a physical sample. And what do you mean by breach?
I have a torch.
Okay, yeah, that works. So a physical sample as well as pictures. If you need me to take a look, once the driver is compliant, I'll do just that. What I'm saying is that I can get, via levitation, I can get to the other vehicle, pry the door open, tell the driver to keep driving, perhaps even to take a detour so that they're on less busy streets, and then I can move her over onto the back, and she can do what she needs to do.
That's assuming that there is a driver for this vehicle.
If there's not a driver, I'm going to blow a hole in the engine block. Either way, that car's stopping, or we're getting on it.
But as
what's more liable to make a mess? If we crash the truck or if we mount the back of it?
Crash is going to be messy, but
I feel like mounting it would be easier.
It would be, but if we can't stop it, or rather get it to play nice,
yeah,
we have to stop it.
I would be worried about the dog brain deciding that it's going to break suddenly, and emotions for four legs. Doesn't quite look right for a dog to do it.
I have significant climbing gear suited for this task.
Oh, I'm perfectly well equipped, I promise.
So I imagine it would be quite easy for me to get onto the onto the vehicle, and then all I need is some help getting through the door.
So then you take the torch. We first confirm if it is, if there's an actual person in the driver's seat. If there's not, then I move you on to... Which one of you is better on a motorcycle?
I mean, I know to ride, and I'd put good money on her knowing how to do it pretty well, too.
Well, then who's more familiar with the torch? Who can work faster cutting
through?
It's my
torch. I think I can do pretty well with it.
Okay, so the plan is, Dee and Dare, you're going to drive us up next to it, almost like you're lane splitting at first, and then I levitate her up onto the vehicle. She breaches into it with a torch. If need be, I will check and then tell her what she needs to grab if she can't tell already. And then we will pull her back out with pictures and physical evidence.
That should be truck doggy brain plan. if there's a driver, we should force them to stop instead of crash, instead of break into it, and then...
See, but then, but if that happens, they'll know something is going on, more so than just the door opening. Yeah? If the truck comes to a stop, they're already on alert. That's going to set off security, is it not?
Yes, which means that we'll have a finite amount of time to work. If there are no closed circuit cameras or nothing that will identify us from the truck, or, well, if we can stay out of the view of those cameras, I have
a jammer if we need it.
A tool that we can use to combat the face recognition, at least the meat side of it.
Well, after the little incident with our esteemed and explosive compatriot, I invested in some high-quality jamming equipment. Very illegal, but also very effective.
Sounds
they won't
like,
be getting anything out. And those kinds of cameras aren't meant to just store data. They're meant to be always uplinked.
So it sounds like we have a plan, or at least we have two plans, which rely on a certain variable.
We have a plan, and we have a backup plan. That's about as much as you can ask.
So, just so we're all on the same page, plan A is to check for a driver, and then if there's a driver, we stop it. We stop the car either using... We can have the horse project and manifest into the car and stop them that way, or we can hop from the bike to the car and use leverage.
And if they won't stop, well, I didn't buy that grenade launcher for no reason.
Let's say that the more higher stopping power plan is plan C. Because even if we can't stop the driver, we can still take advantage of the fact that we can just get into the vehicle. And if we're unable to do so, we blow out the engine block and take our pictures on our own time.
So, okay, so Midnight Angel is like starting, she has pulled out her tome. She's holding it with her magic in plain view of Olga's like the people here. And she's writing out a chart, basically a if then tree. So okay, to be clear, first we approach it and we see if it is driven by a person. If it is not driven by a person, then we move Boxer onto the back. No, that way she would text this. She could text this. Give you a fucking sloppy, what do you call it? MS Paint, then if then tree. So first we check, we get up next to it, we check if it's driven. If it's not, then we move Boxer onto the back of the truck via levitation, and she gets into the crate while I project inside to check for the goods, the suspect goods. And once she's inside, I manifest to designate, to tell her what she needs to grab. And then whenever I get back to my body and I pull her back with that same levitation spell, and then we go. If there's a person inside, we're going to have to get in the cab. I suppose I can manifest, just like you suggested, and I can explain to them why they need to... Are we going to make them stop?
We will attempt to make them stop.
If we have to, I can jump onto the car.
That's called leverage.
We'll tell them to stop.
We threaten to blow their brains out if they don't stop. And then if they don't stop, we assume their employer will blow their brains out if they stop. So we default back to plan B. If plan B doesn't work, then we blow the engine block out of the picture zone at the time.
How exactly do I tell someone I'm going to kill them without, like, you know, crying?
Just point a gun at them and tell them to do what you want. They'll get the point.
Deandre leans over and looks Grace directly in the eye. You look them in the eyes and you tell them that it would be unfortunate for their life if they didn't do what you said.
Okay. I'm going to give them insurance premiums. I understand.
Yes, you should act like you're
Bonnie's have insurance? God.
Capitalism, you can't escape it. No matter what plane of existence you're on.
You should act like you're an insurance saleswoman.
Wouldn't it be terrible if something happened to your fancy truck?
Sounds like something from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Or you could be incredibly blunt and tell them that we're going to blow out the engine block of the truck if they don't stop.
And add that will probably be fatal for them. Okay, I can do that. And then once they've agreed, I don't need a signal because they'll just bring the truck to a stop.
Mm-hmm. The last thing we need to hash out is which freight do we want to go for? Which shipping container do we want to go for?
Well, obviously not the ghouls because they're going to be hard to handle. So as much as I don't like it, probably the other one. The one with the poor dead.
Don't think about it.
The remains.
Think about it. They're just meat now. Just little balls orbiting upper balls, and there's a lot of them. And that's it. That's all. Okay?
Wait, when did they become circular?
Look, I'm not a physicist. They're just meat, okay? Just meat.
Butcher's scraps.
Nightingale gets up and she walks out. She just walks out. She needs a moment to breathe.
I believe we have a substance of a plan.
Yeah, we do.
Indeed.
So why don't we sit back and enjoy our, I'm going to sip coffee.
Even with your cult behind you?
I feel like they'd follow me wherever I went. If they learned I started frequenting another establishment, they'd just end up there.
Huh.
I've decided to stay at the places I like and just... However, I will reward them if they come up and ask me a question to my face. That's about it.
You're going to have to tell me what their deal is later. Because
I think I might
I'm
shout at them
honest.
For wearing the plastic points. Ugh, I hate those things.
You're going to have to tell me what the hell is going on here later because it's fucking freaky. I heard them talking about you and it's like they were talking about like a mythical hero.
To be honest, I've kind of given up trying to dissuade them on anything else. It's too much work. I've given them a stupid long by name that they can use. The stars reflecting off the waters at night. Quite poetic.
Oh, I'm sure they love that one.
You don't actually see the guy, that group that you told that name to in here today. Hmm. At this point.
They probably have a form already.
They told me they had like a clubhouse, right?
they've probably broken off and started their own chapters in other parts of North America.
Oh, God.
They've taken the blessing that you've given them by speaking to them and gone on and started their own chapter houses.
Oh, well.
They recorded it. It's holy words now.
It's all over me feed now.
I think D&D is...
there spoke to me.
Theatering
stars reflecting spoke to me.
All right, so you guys are finishing your coffee and your pastries, and so we're going to cut to Cecile as she is making her way through the Auburn streets headed for this Kaylee woman's street clinic.
Revenge of endeavor.